We are back. It's the Joe Holka Show presented by Line Movement. Thanks everyone for being here. It's week two, a true first look. I don't think a lot of people have probably looked at the upcoming week two slate yet, but we'll get to do that. We'll walk through some DK pricing. We'll walk through a little bit of what we can expect on the waiver wire if you're a season-long person. There's going to be weeks, especially in the beginning, before we have much context, before we have much data, where things are going to look a little bit more wonky than they typically do, right? So we'll get into all that. We do have Sigmund Bloom for the first time today. We didn't really need to talk about trades necessarily last week, right? It was week one. But now that we have that first data point, really excited to talk some football with my boy Sigmund Bloom. But before we do, time to bring in our weekly guest, Jake Seeley. You've seen him on Twitter. He's at AllInKid. He is the senior writer, as an official title, at The Athletic. Jake, welcome back to the Joe Holka Show. How did week one treat you, my friend? That's what I want to know.
Week one, cash-wise, treated me well. Tournament, I got too frisky at some spots, and I didn't hit any tournaments, but that's usually what happens in week one. Week one's kind of a crapshoot anyway, you know that.
Yeah, a little frisky. What was some of your, I guess, hot takes on Sunday morning that you talked yourself into and just went horribly wrong?
It wasn't even so much that. I talked myself into, because week one was such a crazy situation, to pay up for Christian McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook and just go balls out at wide receiver at like $4,000 and $5,000 guys. And that's actually really what killed me in tournaments. That's why cash wise, everything was fine. The tournaments is what killed me there.
It sounds like you had a great week, man. You paid up for Christian McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook. Was it just the rest of your team was right? It was rough at value for sure this week. But did you end up playing Boston Scott? That's my main question.
That hit me in a couple spots. A lot of the cash games where I had them, fortunately, I still had a good percentage of. It looks like I'm looking right now. I still hit on most of them. Boston Scott was a killer. I'm trying to think, what was the other big killer? I'm going back to my results. I'm clicking back. Sure. Between all of them, who's the other one that kind of killed everybody? I'm trying to think.
That wide receiver range, man, if you didn't pick the right one kind of in like that 5K range, you were just absolutely buried, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, it was on FanDuel. Yeah, it was like Terry McLaurin killed me, obviously. And then when I didn't take Terry McLaurin, I pivoted to Steve Sims, and neither of them, I mean, obviously, if you know, getting 60 points or 60 yards of 6 points is not really what we want for DFS.
Let's not waste any more time. So we'll hit on a few key pickups at running back and at wide receiver. I guess the first one that you mentioned to me at the running back position, talk a little bit about your boy Malcolm Brown as being one of the top waiver wire pickups. He's officially your boy. He was first on your list. He's officially your boy.
He's officially, if you talked about this backfield as a whole, he's the third of my boys. Like, my boys are Akers, then Henderson, then Malcolm Brown. It comes down to Malcolm Brown is, I think, he's a fine running back. And so what I'm going to say is that's not a bad thing always. I say the same thing about Jordan Howard. The problem is you can find a lot of running backs that do the exact same thing as these guys do. In the right offenses, in the right situations, that can be very productive. Week one, Daryl Henderson didn't look 100%. Akers was out there to start things and looked okay. But as you just an eye test that everybody likes to throw out that name or that cliche or so often, Malcolm Brown looked the best, and I think for right now he's going to be the lead. And if you're looking for running backs in your seasonal league, you have to go get Malcolm Brown just for the chance that he's the guy for a while in this offense. And then, yes, he didn't do a ton, but we got what we wanted from James Robinson. He had all of the running back carries. Chris Thompson was about the same involved, and I say the same involved because Robinson was involved in the passing game. So I think you have to look at James Robinson. And then, of course, with Marlon Mack being hurt, Nyheim Hines, I think I told you this before. I've said it so many times, I don't remember. I said he was going to be this year's James White. That was before Mack even got hurt. So now he's going to be even better James White this year.
Interesting. Yeah. So if you had to pick between those three guys, maybe you're trying to not completely burn out all of your waiver wire funds for the year in week two. Do you have any, I guess, lean between those three? Say they're all available in your league.
Yeah, see, I think Malcolm Brown's going to, if you want to go with the savings, it's James Brown, because I think everybody's going to just see the box score and be like, oh, he didn't do that much. Mm-hmm. And, that's a legitimate concern if the Jaguars are going to be passing a ton this year. If you're in full PPR, Nyheim Hines is great, but I think a lot of people, I feel like the priority, if I'm estimating what people are going to do, I feel like it's going to be Brown, Hines, and then James Robinson. So if you're looking, all three of them can be long-term. I think Malcolm Brown actually has the most risk to lose his job. So James Robinson would be the one that I would just try to, I don't want to spend all my money yet. I'll go get the one for the value.
Okay, interesting. So do you think it's a clear tier down to a guy like Joshua Kelly, AP Barber, those guys?
Yeah, so I wouldn't even waste my time so much with AP unless I needed a starter right now. Maybe right. Lost Mac or something like that. Peyton Barber, absolutely not. We do this all the time with Peyton Barber. I don't know. I don't.
I never mess with these guys, ever.
What does Peyton Barber just have like a book of pictures on the entire NFL? Like, I don't understand how he keeps getting so much work. The guy had what, 1.7 or 8 yards per carry yesterday. He's the guy, I guess, for now. I just, it looks like it's going to be Antonio Gibson at some point. And I do actually expect Bryce Love to eventually get involved once he's back to 100%. But yeah, I wouldn't even make, don't go chasing Peyton. If you chased Peyton Barber last year, you know the pain of trying to chase Peyton Barber again.
I'll say it. I say it all the time that like there's similar themes every single year, but sometimes they're the same names. Like sometimes you make the same mistake the next year as well. So I'm not doing the Peyton Barber thing again. At wide receiver, sounds like if anyone dropped DeSean Jackson, I think we're jumping back on that train first, aren't we?
Yeah, DeSean Jackson should still be. I mentioned like they didn't even use him as much as they planned to be able to use him. I don't understand why they were increasing snap counts, but they are. I would still go look for him. Preston Williams was still out there plenty, and Devontae Parker aggravated his injury. Whether or not that affects him for week two, we'll have to see. But Preston Williams looked good. The Anthony Miller I mentioned last week on my column, and I still think he's a decent pickup. The only concerning thing there was he rotated a little bit more with Ted Ginn than I expected. So if you're after those, both Packers wide receivers are out there. Whether you're going to be Lazard or Valdez-Scantling any given week, I don't know that's going to be predictable. For a while there in that game, neither one of them were that much involved. It was one right. for nine for Lazard was the second most receiving yards on that team initially. So I don't think that's going to happen every single week. But at this point, you know what? I feel safer about going to get Paris Campbell, though I think both of the Packers have a higher ceiling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so was there anyone on fantasy Twitter that was just like, I guess there was more Rejoice around or Laviska Shenault? Am I saying his name right? I know that everyone was going crazy when he scored and he basically didn't do much after that. So do you think that he's in play as being someone that we could kind of look to on the waiver wire this week?
So it's funny. Yeah, Laviska Shenault. You got Shenault right.
Laviska. I like that better. I might just call him that.
Yeah. Call him Vise.
So, I like it.
So Laviska Shenault. So I did a show last week with Nando, and Nando said, what would it take in week one from Shenault for you to quote unquote trust him? And I said, he needs to be running as at least the number three, if not the number two wide receiver. He was running as the number three. He was third most in snaps, and he was at the heels of Keelan Cole in week one as a rookie. If you're looking for the upside play, I mean, obviously, if this offense goes to junk any given week, which is always the risk with the Jaguars, if, you know, Cole is clearly the number two going for the rest of the season. But, you know, D.D. Westbrook was inactive in week one. And again, Shenault was not only the number three just on the heels of Cole, but he also got backfield carries. So if you're looking for the fun play, if you're looking for the, like, hey, I want to hit a home run here. The two guys, it's James Robinson and Shenault. Go Jaguars. That's what we're doing here.
We like fun, that's for sure. Two guys that don't seem like too much fun. Sneed, Aguilar, those are the last two guys on your list. Definitely a tier down from the other guys we mentioned at wide receiver. But talk a little bit about why these guys might be in play.
Those were the don't even waste your time picking them up.
Oh, okay. So those are the ones where it's like people are going to waste their fob on it early and you're not interested.
I'll have in the waiver column, I'll have other guys in front of them, and they're in a section called meh. Like I even put the emoji like there. It's like, don't even waste your time. Willie Snead, snap count. Same thing with Aguilar. Aguilar was only out there for like 12% of the snaps. Those are always the fluke weeks where, again, if you didn't watch the games, I'm not saying everybody has time to do what we do. So that's why we're here for you, is if you didn't watch the game, you'll just see the box score and not realize these guys were not on the field that much.
Jake Seeley, everyone, follow him on Twitter at AllInKid. Jake, before we get out of here, tell all the people about what's going on at The Athletic. You mentioned your article, but I know you got a lot of stuff going on over there. So plug your stuff. I appreciate you being with us for week two.
Yeah, and we actually have a code for you guys. Well, a link for you guys nice. If you go to theathletic.com. Yeah, athletic.com/line movement, name of you guys, $1 a month. You can get all these articles. $1 a month, you really have no reason not to. But the waiver column comes out tonight, midnight. The rankings come out tomorrow night at midnight and then updated every single day all the way through kickoff on Sunday. Great stuff like this, but you know, we're doing a lot of my I have my adjusted fantasy points allowed column, which everybody loves, especially for DFS, but the only DFS I'm doing is here with you, so we have to watch it here for you. But if you want the advice column on like where you see adjusted fantasy points allowed, then go check that out.
Awesome, man. I'll see you next week. Appreciate it. If there's a Mount Rushmore of fantasy football, he's certainly on it, right? So the co-owner of Football Guys, Sigmund Bloom, Welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's great that we have these opportunities. And I think that it's a shame because the thing that makes the fantasy football community go is how much we like each other. I think we genuinely like each other. And mm-hmm. in the internet world, where it can be rough out there on those streets, we generally support each other and pick each other up. And we want to help each other. We want to help each other be successes, just like we want to help our customers, our fans, our listeners, our viewers be successes. And most of all, we just want to share the experience, you know? So whether it's donut on your face or having DeAndre Hopkins as a fade in the second round, yeah, you know, we're all human.
Yeah. What's awesome is, Sig, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but like the Audible was like one of my first like experiences with fantasy football, like podcasts, anything like that. Right. So I should be thanking you that I finally made it kind of to this whole area. But people probably don't know this, but when I was still playing minor pro hockey, I actually reached out to you via email. You got back to me and actually called me. I'm sitting in the lobby waiting to go play a playoff game, and Sigmund Bloom is calling me. I got this, it was a Pittsburgh number or something like that, so I knew it was you right away. You're like, hey, this is Sigmund Bloom. I was like, oh my God, I listened to this guy for years on podcasts. I was that guy in college that just took fantasy football way too seriously, and all my friends hated me because I was blowing them up for trades and all that stuff all the time. But yeah, man, I owe you a lot just for that, man. Just that phone call, I was like eternally grateful for, because it made it feel like this was something that could be, I guess, a life after hockey.
Just like everybody else, including yourself, Joe, we're all voices and extensions of the universe. We're all providing signposts for each other. And usually, hopefully, in the name of positivity, enthusiasm, and no matter how your week one went, you should still be very enthusiastic today.
I think this is the perfect segment for you, Sig. Like, we're gonna talk. We're gonna talk through some trades. I've been kind of a little bit more focused over the last couple of years on betting and on DFS, so I'm kind of dipping my toe back into the season long streets. But one of the things that I was always really in on was trades. So trade targets. It is week two. We didn't do a week one trade targets because that's probably a little bit tougher to do. But overall, do you think that there's people that overreact a little bit to week one versus, like, I guess there's people that they're just blowing up their entire team after the first week, right? I guess where do you land on that? Do you like to give it a little bit more time to settle now that we have this first data point?
I'm an overreactor. I overreact. But, well, look, we drafted our teams with zero data points. Mm-hmm. Especially when we're talking about teams with new coaches, new schemes, new quarterbacks, we drafted our teams with zero data points. Mm-hmm. So making a big move with one data point isn't that crazy. We're always making decisions with incomplete information in fantasy football. That's what we do. We pretend to know the future. And everybody's very kind to let us pretend to do this and call it a job or otherwise something we can do and justify the time we put into it, not just because we're obsessed. So thanks for encouraging us, everybody. So I do think that, especially where we have context, you always want to have a why. Where we have context, whether it's buying low, selling high, buying high, or selling low, you know, for instance, how to parse the receivers in Carolina. And you're always sticking your neck out. So this is a prime trade week because some want to see more evidence before they act, and they're still going on ADP. And my buddy Adam Harstad, who is always coming up with these angles that other people don't see, say ADP is as predictive of rest of season performance as week one, as week two, as week three. Even only week four does the current season's information start to tip in favor of going on the current season's information over ADP. But that means you have a trade market.
Yeah,
you know, if you have, for instance, DJ Moore, and you want to get 80 or 90 cents on the dollar because you think the three receivers in Carolina will all be roughly equal as they were in targets, you will find someone who will give you 80, 90 cents on the dollar. Now, if he gets shut down by Tampa Bay, maybe it goes down to 70 cents on the dollar. So this is a prime week to make trades, but you have to have conviction and be willing to live with some of those trades. And I know we all have some.
I love that. So, like, kind of bringing it full circle to DFS, like, these first couple weeks are a really profitable time of the year for me, because we think we know way more than we actually know in the beginning, right? So we see these guys that end up being super highly owned in DFS when there's really someone that's pretty comparable, at least their ceiling is comparable. You get them at a much lower ownership. So I love the beginning of the season. So I would say that I'm probably closer to you. Like, I'm more willing to say that maybe I was wrong. Let's see who's, like, going to hold on a little bit longer to some of these takes that we were talking about for months and months and months. So it is the week two trade targets video. We're going to do our best to hit on a couple of Sig's favorites each and every week. We finally have this week one data point, Sig. So Antonio Gibson, someone that you're targeting. Tell us why.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you get someone who's disappointed, and you get someone who got him earlier in the draft season when they were maybe 11th, 12th, 13th round, 13th round prices for Gibson. You know, someone who paid a 5th or 6th round price for Gibson probably isn't going to sell low right now. But the idea here is this, and I'm going to use a hockey analogy. I hope I'm allowed to do that, Joe, because I mean, I'm in your house, so I want to respect the lord of the manor. But like Wayne Gretzky said, man, you skate to where the puck's going to be.
Love it.
Not to where the puck is. Where the puck is right now is Antonio Gibson is a young, inexperienced running back. The Washington trusts this far. Okay, they trust Peyton Barber, like the new Frank Gore, right? I mean, he's not in Frank Gore's category as a runner, but I just mean a ruiner of fantasy value.
Yep.
They trust Peyton Barber to handle those goal line carries, to get the dirty work. 17 carries for 29 yards. 2 touchdowns. That's the most Peyton Barber line of all the Peyton Barber lines ever.
Yeah.
So the idea here is at some point, Gibson is going to get the carries, the opportunities to convert his immense talent into fantasy value and production. He was an unorthodox runner, but he was still a productive runner, and he hung with the Eagles defense. So it may take a few weeks, you know, against Arizona this week. Arizona was pretty tough on San Francisco's run game, actually. Maybe it's not this week. You know, maybe it's not until week 3, week 4, week 5. But if Gibson had gotten those goal line carries, Joe, and he had scored twice, he'd be one of the toasts of the league.
That's the difference,
don't you think,
right?
You know, don't you think eventually he's going to get them? So this is a time you want to capitalize potentially on disappointment.
I love that, especially a guy that, like, yes, if that would have swung just slightly differently his way, we wouldn't even be talking about him as someone that, like, people are down on. So I love the hockey analogy there, of course. Like, the biggest difference, I always say this, the biggest difference from someone like me that played in the East Coast League or even someone that played in the American League, sometimes the biggest difference is just what they have between the ears, right? So, like, the talent at that level isn't as different as most people think it is. It's the people in the NHL. They probably think the game a little bit better. They're probably a little bit smarter, a little bit quicker. And it's the same thing in football, right? It's not necessarily how smart you are in terms of, like, book smart. It's like how fast does your brain process things is how it gets you to that next level. So I always think that's super interesting. From a trade perspective, you're always going to be in a better spot if you're willing to look to where the puck is going. So I love that, man. I'm going to steal that for sure.
Yes.
In terms of unorthodox runners, I'll I guess flex a little bit on the little bit of film that I've done in my life. I used to have a running back methodology called rushing expectation. The first guy that I ever charted was David Johnson, someone that kind of runs a little bit more upright than some of these typical running backs that we see. So Sig, that he's someone that you're interested in going after in the trade markets, right? So what do you think about David Johnson?
Again, we're looking at price paid and how much people are willing to believe what they saw week one, right? So David Johnson, it could not have gone better. Well, I guess it could have gone better. Houston's offense could have played better. But as far as everything under David Johnson's control, it couldn't have gone any better. He looked like David Johnson of old.
Mm-hmm.
He had the speed. He had the wiggle. He had the toughness. You know, even that, because I think in Arizona last year, we saw him maybe lose a little bit of his nerve. And speaking of charging back at Northern Iowa, he didn't seem to relish, you know, slamming it up, you know, get that 1 yard when all that he was fantastic as a receiver. They barely used him as a receiver. That's another thing.
Right.
He actually has room to grow. So the point here is this. Someone might have paid a 4th round pick for David Johnson and thought, well, if I can get, you know, say, so here's an interesting way to look at it, right? Trade Austin Ekeler for David Johnson and something else of value, mm-hmm. you know? You're looking at this where you have also the sell side of this where, hey, Austin Ekeler was a 2nd-round pick last week. David Johnson was a 4th-round pick last week, right? So if I can get Ekeler for David Johnson and CeeDee Lamb, I'm winning that trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's how you want to think of it. You want to think of it from the other person's side, looking at ADP, and if you have one of those highly drafted running backs that, you know, Kenyon Drake, that you're saying, I can already tell it's not going to be the happy ending story that I was looking for when I drafted him. This is a chance for, again, getting the falling knife, the classic falling knife, right, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
If you get 75 cents on the dollar for some of these players, you're going to look back and say you won because the value is only going to slide from here. And it's the expectations coming into the season that is the only thing holding them up.
Sig, I thought I knew where some of this conversation was going to go. It turns out I'm like completely wrong from some of this. I thought that it was like, okay, like we got to sell high on these guys that came out of the gates hot. You're almost saying that sometimes like we have to just shift our thinking that maybe we were just wrong about some of these guys in the first place. Right. And ADP just doesn't matter as much as we, or at least people like me that like are more focused on like DFS, that sort of stuff. So I was like, all right, who can I sell high? As I thought who we were going to talk about. But it turns out like maybe we were just wrong on some things. I think that's great perspective. Yeah.
Well, and that's why I say sell high, sell low, and buy high is actually also a thing. And we also have to ask, why was David Johnson a fourth-round pick? Because we didn't trust him to be David Johnson. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a healthy skepticism there. I've seen enough to know that he's David Johnson. Again, he's not the guy we saw that looked like he turned into an 80-year-old and before our very eyes that one game. So, you know, but it's taking advantage of people's reluctance to accept the new reality, but you have to stick your neck out and believe it on limited evidence.
Yep. I love it. So let's talk about another guy that probably one of the league's most buried talents. I don't know if we can say that, but right. He's got such a good team. It's Mecole Hardman. So it sounds like that's someone that you'd be interested in going after. Injury away from being like a guy that can break this season completely open for you. So let's talk about Mecole Hardman for a second.
Exactly. Well, you encapsulated his value. It's you know, you're investing in Mahomes. You're investing in Hardman. He's behind DeMarcus Robinson, who did not look good. So if there's one obstacle, Hill and Watkins already had soft tissue injuries this summer. Mm-hmm. But I think of this, Joe, like the powder and the flame, right? I mean, we just need the powder and the flame to get together. Yep. It may not happen, but if it does, boom goes the dynamite. And emotional. We're always looking at the emotional side of this. So the team that took Hardman 9th, 10th, 11th round, thinking I've got a nice little seed to plant on my bench. First week, he's not even ahead of DeMarcus Robinson as a throw-in in a trade or in a minor trade. Or again, look at the Hardman team's rosters. Yep. They have a whole tight end right now. That, you know, that was their tight end Blake Jarwin or something like that. Hardman can win your league for you. He might not do it, but those are the guys I want on my roster.
Yeah, this was like, I think when I saw your list today, this was my favorite one that I wanted to talk about, because I have so many biases, I guess, with like Sammy Watkins in particular, because he's someone that always looks good on paper from a DFS perspective. Then I'll play him. He'll get me like 50 yards. But so it's like if he goes off in week one, it seems like every year everyone's excited about him, all of that stuff. I'm a little bit more cautious with guys like Watkins. I saw what you saw in terms of Robinson, like he was getting targets. So like these Mecole Hardman people probably were, I mean, a little bit upset with what they saw.
Right.
So like that's perfect, right? These are the type of guys that can break things open. If like what you said, things go their way even a little bit more than they did in week one, those are the situations that we need to be looking at. So I love that one, Sig. The last guy that we'll talk about today, and then we'll get you out of here. I know you're a busy guy. Malcolm Brown seems to be on the tip of everyone's tongue right now. He's someone that you might be able to get on the waiver wire, but if not, is he someone that we should be trying to trade for in week two?
Yeah, or maybe even trade for, I mean, this almost is a take that stands for bid a little more on the waiver wire. I mean, if you miss out on Nyheim Hines or James Robinson and you end up getting Malcolm Brown, because he was a week one Fugazi last year, right? He had those two touchdowns. We thought, oh, Todd Gurley and the knee and everything, it's going to come together for Brown, and it didn't. But what we saw last night was, and they've already said, sometimes coaches just come right out and tell us the truth.
Sometimes.
They trust.
Unless you're Bruce Arians.
Sometimes. Well, Bruce Arians was telling the truth when he said he was very disappointed with
that. Yeah, but now no one knows he's telling the truth when he's telling the truth, because he never tells the truth.
That's all part of the angle, right?
Oh, that's the worst.
So look, you know, Malcolm Brown was clearly the best running back on the Rams last night. And Cam Akers did very little to make it seem like he's going to overtake Malcolm Brown at some point. Brown was even more productive in the passing game. Mm-hmm. So people are going to look at this and think, just like last year. Again, you're always thinking of this in the context. You're trying to anticipate people's psychology on this stuff. This is hence on the couch and my highly psychological. I'm analyzing myself most of the time anyway.
Yeah.
The point is, people are going to say, yeah, I've seen this before from Malcolm Brown. It's not going to happen again. The reality is the way that Sean McVay wants this offense to go, and it might just be there's a whole other side. Speaking of evaluating running backs, Joe, there's a whole other side of this. I wonder, does Sean McVay even understand what works in his system? Because, you know, go ahead.
I had such high hopes for the Sean McVay stuff after what we saw in that first year. Like, coming from someone like you that just knows the game so well, do you think people just like started to pick up on what he was doing with Goff and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Is that kind of like people have figured it out now, so it's not a like it's not as valuable? Same kind of thing, like it's not the same, but like we see Colin Kaepernick come on the scene. No one knows what to do with this running quarterback, right? And
right.
he just runs through all these teams in the playoffs. Like, do you think people just kind of started to figure out McVay and his system, and now it's just not as popular or not as, I guess, useful?
Well, I think it's that he doesn't have a counter, right? He doesn't have
there
a second move. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, the league, i.e. Bill Belichick, and
sure.
my good friend Eric Stoner, who I love talking football with, among other things, pointed out that if you go back and watch the NFL film stuff on that Super Bowl, when McVay meets Belichick before the game, he's like, oh, my God, you're so incredible. You're amazing, yeah. you're amazing, you're amazing. And at that point, you know he's defeated. You know he's defeated. Because he's in awe of him instead of thinking of him as an adversary that he's going to go, you know, fight to the death with. And Belichick understood that Goff is an extension of McVay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you cut off the extension, because it's the 15-second rule when they turn off that transmitter of the helmet, so whatever you show Goff before 15 seconds, if he sees something different when the ball is snapped, then he's not going to have McVay there whispering in his ear telling him what to do. And well, here's what's really funny. Here's the real interesting psychological projection here, Joe,
mm-hmm.
because Wade Phillips, who doesn't love Wade Phillips? I mean, please, who doesn't love Wade Phillips, okay? Who didn't love Bum Phillips back in the day? Wade Phillips was fired, basically, for Brandon Staley. Brandon Staley, part of the Vic Fangio regime of defensive coaches and so on. That's good. You know, got you know, Leonard Floyd had a big play last night. Floyd did some good things under Staley when they were together in Chicago. He was the outside linebacker coach there. Here's what McVay instructed Staley to do, because McVay leaned in on defense. After everything that happened with them last year, he's not leaning in on offense. He's leaning in on defense.
Yep.
And what did he instruct Staley to do? Show them one look at the snap, but then actually reveal another look after the ball snap, right? Isn't that perfect? So McVay understands what beats him, but unfortunately, because they've signed Goff to this long contract, did you also see, by the way, Roby Coleman
oh.
when he joined the Eagles, right?
Yep.
And he said, well, Wentz takes ownership of the offense. Ownership. It's not Goff's offense. It's McVay's offense. So this is all really interesting from the reality show point of view of the NFL, watching McVay and how he went from being the it boy to a guy who understands what defeats him on defense, wants to reproduce that. But I still wonder, I mean, 20 points on the Cowboys defense, we're going to look back at that and say, that's it. 20 points, you won. But the point of all this is Malcolm Brown's the guy. He's going to remain the guy. He's not going to win leagues for you. But Cam Akers isn't going to overtake him. Darrell Henderson is going to overtake him. Darrell Henderson's not a zone runner. I mean, I don't know why Sean McVay took him to do something totally different than what he's good at. Cam Akers was best with the lead fullback. Not really going to get that in Rams offense either.
Yep.
Malcolm Brown's going to run hard downhill where he's supposed to with urgency. He can do that. That's what McVay wants right now. That's what he's going to get. So Brown, I think, is someone people are fading because of memories of what happened, but you got to live in the present.
Sigmund Bloom, everyone. He's the co-owner of Football Guys. If you're serious about fantasy football, guys, I would definitely urge everyone here to check them out. Sig, any parting words, my friend? This was great.
No, I'm glad we get a chance to hang out every week.
This is like the thing. Like everyone's so busy during the football season. I needed an excuse to like talk to my friends. Like we got Matt Harmon on Wednesdays. We got Rich Rebar. We got TJ Hernandez on later this week. Mike Tagliere earlier today. Jake Seeley. It's just like I'm just gonna catch up with all my buddies, but I'm gonna do it live on stream and see what happens. So I appreciate it, man. I'm gonna get my toe deeper and deeper into the season long thing. I think I have to.
It's fun. I mean, it's not for the compulsive gambler in us because it doesn't give you a payoff for a long time. But it's fun because it has a long story, like opera. There's a big reveal at the end. And when you do actually win a championship, it means something because it's hard. And you created the fantasy A-list here. So I'm just happy that I can get into this party.
I'm excited. I'm excited for week two and beyond. Appreciate it, Sig. We'll see you next week. All right, man.
My pleasure.